Hello and welcome back to The Bilbao Effect, a podcast series that looks at whether culture can boost economic development from FDI intelligence. I'm Seth O'Farrell, FDI's global investment reporter. Last week, we heard from Juan Ignacio Vidarte, the Director General of the Guggenheim Bilbao, who said that the mistake that many city planners have made post-Bilbao is to think that an impressive slice of contemporary architecture is enough to kickstart urban regeneration. Instead, Vidarte said, it is important that thought and work go into infrastructure and education to stoke economic development. Our second guest is Maya Hoffman, collector, patron, curator, and heir to the Swiss pharmaceutical giant Hoffmann Roche. She is founder and president of the Luma Foundation, a non-profit arts organization based in Zurich, and has just unveiled the Luma Arles Tower in the city of Arles in southern France. The opening of the tower was greeted with much fanfare and has been widely featured in the French and international press. The impressive twisting tower, designed by American architect Frank Gehry, whom we spoke about in relation to the Guggenheim in Bilbao last week, is the centrepiece of Luma Arles, a $175 million arts complex spanning 27 acres and built on a defunct rail yard. The foundation is multidisciplinary, with attention given to culture, environment, education, and research. Maya has just received the Commandeur des Arts et Lettres, the highest distinction awarded by France's Ministry of Culture. It is an absolute privilege to be speaking with her today. Maya Hoffman, welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm happy to be with you today.
We're very happy that you're here. I thought we could start off with you telling us a bit about Luma Arles itself, how long this project has been in the pipeline, and what does the opening of the new tower mean for the arts complex?
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for the precise introduction. And I think we need to understand that Luma Arles, or the Luma presence in Arles, is really one of the projects of the Luma Foundation, which has had a long existence. But I think we can come back to this a little later. So Luma Arles is this new tower, and which has been pretty much criticized throughout the years. It took us 10 years, more or less, to set it up. To build, we are building since 2014. Mm-hmm. And Luma Arles is the center of an art complex, which we started exactly 10 years ago. So it's one of the elements, but it is obviously the one we kept for the end because it's also the most spectacular. It opened at the same time than a garden that we want to stand for an example of a park that is taking care of, that is implanted in its own region. In this case, it's showing the Camargue marshes, all the wetlands with which we have been also involved for long years. And it's also showing the habitats of the Crau and the Alpilles. It is the only green place in Arles, which has always been, which has obviously a big past as a Roman city, but which does not have any green parts unless you really make a big effort to find a system on how to bring water to this Mediterranean climate. The new tower is actually the lighthouse. People ask why a tower. It is more in order to understand the habitat around Arles and to understand the territory. In fact, you see the river, the Rhone River, to the north, going all the way to Switzerland, by the way. And mm-hmm. then you see to the south the way it goes into the Mediterranean. And we want to stand for a Mediterranean art complex. We're really very involved in this, also through the research center we have in the mm-hmm. Camargue.
There's a strong link between this Arles Tower and the Bilbao's Guggenheim, about which we spoke last week. Both were designed by the same architect, Frank Gehry. Was Bilbao a model in your mind for what you wanted to achieve with this art complex in Arles?
Not really. What we want to achieve is more the Luma effect than the Bilbao effect. Being we are based on an archipelago, so we have several projects that I have been trying to put under one place. For years and years, we've been nomadic with our think tanks and with our projects, working with other institutions. And we now are having a space in which we can host the other institutions, which makes a difference. It's a shift. The Bilbao effect comes probably a little with, I mean, what you can call the Bilbao effect is more the Frank Gehry effect. But it is not the reason why I wanted to work with Frank. I wanted to work with Frank because I love to exchange with him, and he is thinking like an artist. And we work with many artists. The fact that Frank designed a tower was also meant, yes, to attract attention, to attract international and local attention on our work, because we have projects that have social impact on our environment. So it was important that we think just big enough in order to create this this way of moving forward that is needed, because the artists and the art world are very often not considered as a full, at their full strength and at their full capacity of changing the world. And for me, this is an important topic for the last 20 years it has been.
And so let's go into a little bit about what the Luma Aal Foundation does exactly. So you host exhibitions, you have exhibition spaces, archive spaces, a library, a restaurant, you put on live performances, fund artist residencies, and the list goes on and on. Can you give our listeners a brief introduction to just the expansive work that you do at Luma Aal?
So the Luma Aal is not a foundation. Luma Aal is a space implanted in Aal, and it's a project of the Luma Foundation. So it actually can house all of our projects, and it allows us to organize meetings with other people. It's a tool. The whole complex is a tool in order to have people there, artists mainly, able to use this tool in order to research and to display art. It's complex, I understand, because we have several projects coming together. It's a layering of the projects of the Luma Foundation. If you go today into the Tower of Gehry and in the adjacent halls, which are the exhibition halls, you will see that every one of our displays is actually speaking about the same thing. But this will occur in the way that you, yourself, the visitor, we put it together. It's quite a free itinerary. The layering of things allows us to exist on the long term. It allows us a longevity that is not given usually to any exhibition or to any display, because some of them are artist commissions which are going to stay, but they are the fruit of long term collaborations. And I think what is striking the first is that we are in an environment that is unusual for a museum, with the park. The park being not a sculpture park, but a park hosting installations by artists or other activities. And that we are also a long-term endeavor, because we are interested in the thinking of the artists, and they build one work after the other.
And so what does Luma Aal in all its splendor mean for the Aalesians, do you think, or the people of Aal?
As you know, this year we have lesser international visitors than in other years, and hopefully than in the coming years. But the Aal people have been really coming, and they entered similarly in the tower than in the garden, asking questions, looking at exhibitions, trying to familiarize themselves with the artists. We have a very good mediation group, as you say in French. The médiation is quite good. We had time to open to train. And we also have a few places that are not completely implanted yet, but where you can also take refreshments, sit, eat, talk. And this has been working really well with the Aalesians. They are actually thankful to have a green space in the town, because it was missing.
And you're not concerned that the towering structure, you mentioned that there's been a certain amount of criticism about the tower over the last few years. Are you concerned that now that it's up and running, that it's intimidating in any way, or that it's sort of, it is distancing for the people of Arles?
We want it to be not intimidating, obviously. We introduced it, and it is like a gate into the garden, one of the three gates. It is an entrance to a private-public collaboration. It is an entrance to a whole universe where you can freely choose how to go. Yes, of course, it will be intimidating at first for some of our audience living in the outskirts, for instance. But it is certainly not presenting itself like a bubble for contemporary art, which is one of the main concerns that one could have when speaking about contemporary art globally, anyway. No, we also have other entry points than the Gary Tower to our work. We also have this Atelier Luma, which I think I would like to tell you a little more, but maybe not now directly, about. And we work on an everyday basis since 10 years, as I said, with certain members of our population who really wanted to come, and the others are following little by little. Now, if you speak about the taste and the architectural gesture, this is something else. I think the discussion will stay, and will stay for a long time, and probably forever. Mm. It is a gesture of an architect, yes, but it's certainly not the desire of a collector like myself to make a gesture of for a star architect. Mm-hmm. And the project mm-hmm. has not the vanity that can sometimes be found in similar gestures, because it's a completely open space that is meant first for the Arlesiens, then for the global visitors interested in contemporary art.
Mm-hmm. And so you spoke a little bit about the fact that this is a green space and the city hasn't had that before. So many locals are very jubilant about that. In a post-COVID world, though, how do you think Luma Arles will help the local community and the local economy?
Well, we are providing jobs more than if we were not around, let's say, right? We are there open all year, which is maybe not always in the same intensity, because COVID has also shown us that we need some rest time and some downtime once in a while. But we are there all year. We are not participating in augmenting the numbers of visitors in a town for a given time only. We are not a festival. We are really an institution open all year long with different activities. So I think this will be really an advantage for the Arles people and for the whole region. Now, of course, the mayor has said that it is a wonderful opportunity, but he also added it is also a terrible challenge for the town. I think I know where he's hinting to, and I'm not far off thinking the same than he does. The challenge is to bring the infrastructures of the town more or less to the level of the tower. And this we actually had 10 years to do, but it moved not as fast as we moved. So we may need time to integrate all these outskirts, to integrate the entrances and mm-hmm. the environment mm-hmm. around the tower mm-hmm. to the tower, and thus integrate the tower into the town. Because this is not a one-way situation. This needs two ways.
And how do you plan on doing that? What are the sorts of mechanisms by which the tower will be better integrated into the surrounding infrastructure?
I think we need to pay attention to traffic. We need to pay attention to the way people can go from the parking, the big new parking lot, to the tower, to signage, to to working together, and the park is really helping for this, because it gives us different ways of getting integrated into the town. So we are actually doing some urbanist. We take the role of an urbanist, because we are also giving new ways of using this whole quartier, this whole neighborhood that was the Parc des Ateliers, and that was really a desert when we arrived. And it was only open once a year for the photo festival. And then it was really falling back into desert.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a bit about the photo festival then, and some of the other cultural institutions that exist in Arles. So we have the Van Gogh Foundation, a Lee Ufan Foundation, I believe is about to be unveiled. Tell us a bit about how Arles has changed in its cultural scene over the last 10 years.
Well, Arles has changed quite a lot, but up to now it changed only more in summertime, like I said, where you have a big concentrations of visitors and of tourists coming, either to see the old stones of the Roman amphitheater or the Roman past, or they come for the photo festival, and there the professionals of photography only come 1 week a year, and the photo shows stay open the whole year. But we also have now an institution like the new Liu Fan that I have visited while they were building it. I don't know if it's yet open. And we have a few national museums on, also the new Museum Arlatan, which is a regional museum. We also do have the Van Gogh Foundation, Arles, that is existing since 7 years now. It will have its 7 years coming up, and which does international and high quality exhibitions of contemporary artists responding to Van Gogh and to what he was doing in Arles. So we're certainly going and still moving towards a new cultural identity for Arles that is more spread than only the photo festival. The photo festival is actually the biggest in the world, I think, in terms of notoriety. And I think it's a very important meeting in Arles that should continue to be functional the same way that it was up mm-hmm. to now.
You mentioned that Luma Arles is also not a festival, and it's not a biennial like many other European cities host. Instead, it's there all year round. Do you think that, you know, as we emerge from this pandemic world, which will be potentially a lot more local, a lot more regional, at least with attention given to regional activities, do you think that this is a trend that we'll see more and more of, less or fewer biennales, fewer festivals, and more institutions that are open all year round?
Yes, it is possible. It is possible. But what I am more interested in is to just stressing the fact that the showing of art or display of art is only one part of what artists do and what the cultural producers do. So the work that needs to be done off season, so to say, has the same importance for me than the one that is displayed. So this all gives a movement to what we are doing that I think many other cultural institutions will also want to achieve. The movement that research and display are following each other and allowing us to go deeper into what the meaning of art is and what artists are doing, the comprehension of what artists are doing. So meaning that when we are open all year, we will actually have phases where we are more showing and phases where we are lesser showing. But this all makes a living organism out of our actions. And we are in perpetual movement that way. I think this is one of the new definitions of a museum.
To be in perpetual movement.
I think so, yeah. But mm-hmm. you can do that. You can do the perpetual movement by being also locally implanted. You can be locally implanted, work with the people from the region, from Aal, and you can invite people from outside, mostly young artists in our case, and you can host think tanks, and people come to you because it is a space where it is really nice to rest at the same time, then think at the same time, then exchange. And then you have the layering of all the activities that we have either in-house or that we are related to. You have this layering gives a very rich environment where culture can possibly thrive. So we create a system, actually. We create a system with several speeds. We are not really interested in doing everything following communication plan, or we are not interested in catering only to the audience. What we want is create content. And we have a system that can continue this movement. And so we attract the people who are already interested, but on the way we also may attract, and we are actually de facto, and this is where I am happy today, exhausted but happy, because it actually works. We create a system where newcomers can also come in.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about what the world looked like before the pandemic. You are a global arts patron, fund projects and institutions across the world, such as the New Museum in New York and the Serpentine in London. What do you think globalization meant for art institutions? I'm not talking about the art market, but rather for art institutions, nonprofit institutions, museums over recent decades.
Yeah, I mean, the whole world went global at some point. The pandemic has shown us that it was probably too much, because we are, in doing this, we are attacking ourselves and what is the most central to ourselves. In this case, it shows that it is nature, the planet, that it affects global warming. So being global, I think, has not really helped so much our thinking right now. It was global for... it's really a difficult question you are putting out here. I think that it makes very much sense to be rooted in a region before you just only float globally in order to not... In order to cater to, let's say, your communication plan more than the content. I think what is really important is to create content, and this has to be more and more related to some local context. And then getting global is something actually we also promise to the people who come to visit us, and we are working a lot on our network. We are working on our websites, trying to create an app. We did not do it yet because we, as you know, we are located in Switzerland. And right now, I don't know how much I should just speak only about Aal, and in this case, Luma Aal, or how much the way I see it, it can be. And it can be enclosed in our global thinking of the Luma Foundation, that is then really, right now I separate the two a little, but of course, in our program, it's not separate.
And I saw that the Luma Foundation was also present at Davos in 2020. Do you think that the lines between the arts and global business have become increasingly porous and will become ever more porous?
I think everything should tend at being less in silos, less specialized, and that pluridisciplinarity and overlaps of expertise are really the way to go. So it is for this that we were invited to Davos. We didn't go to Davos. We were invited to present a display on the natural products we are developing in our Atelier Luma. So Atelier Luma is a whole different story that actually fits completely into what I'm saying once you come and visit. Luma Aal is really a place you have to go and visit. It's not possible to to pass the philosophy of Lumaal only with sound or only with images. It's really something you have to live. It's a total immersion. So now, when we went to Davos, we were invited by Davos. We displayed our products. There was a lot of interest because it is actually based on design, and design can be a tool to redefine the world as it is now. When you, with design thinking, you just design what you want to make out of the world. And you get out of this fatalism where you think, oh, anyway, the planet is disappearing, extinction is here. You can say, well, let me take waste material, try and transform it into energy. At least it keeps you busy, let me say, put it that way, right? Mm-hmm.
Can you give a few examples of what you mean by that? What kind of things have come out of the Atelier Luma?
Well, the Atelier Luma is, for instance, working with salt or with algae. Mm-hmm. We also, in the building of Frank's, in the tower, we used some materials of Atelier Luma, and Frank was really also quite interested in seeing that happen. So, for instance, we have one wall out of salt, and the salt is harvested just in the marshes that are next to me here, where because I'm at my house, yeah, just in the marshes. And it takes a few weeks to grow them. And this wall is quite amazing because it is at the same time, it has some purifying effect on you. It's experimental, and it was bold to try and do this because it's over 9 floors mm-hmm. or more. It's over 11 floors, actually. You have one huge wall out of blocks made out of salt that we harvested ourselves. It's quite exhilarating, actually. Or we were also working with algae. We have, for instance, tiles that can be used in construction that are all out of tiles with some resin that is natural inside. And you see all the different colors that come directly from nature. They are actually the same colors that give the color to the pink flamingos, than the dark green that you see in the Japanese restaurants. All of this is just next door, and you can and there is plenty of it. We also invented some bio concrete, for instance, by mixing salt with concrete. And it's an alive, it becomes alive. And it is, of course, experimental, but it's all of these have been followed by scientists and by institutions, and we are getting patented. And there are many of other examples. We also work with textiles. One of our next projects is maybe to attract designers, fashion designers too. And this is all working on the principle of a residency. So we can invite the people, they can spend time here. We can invite the creators, the designers, and then work on specific projects. They can work on their own project, but at the same time, it would be quite fantastic if they also work on something that is specific to this region.
Mm-hmm. And naturally, in the business world, there's been an unprecedented push towards greening our economies. And at Luma, as you say, and in the art world more broadly, there's been a significant momentum in ecology and ecological art. Do you think that it's ahead of the climate emergency that we'll see more, even greater overlapping between the arts and the global economy?
I don't know really how much they really influence each other. I don't know how much green is influencing the global economy. All I know is that most of the global players in economy want and have to re-green their image. That's all I see now. What they really do is something that is a much larger discussion, which I'm really going to get more and more interested in, because it's really time to be active and to take steps more than to only stay in conversations. I've been quite boldly taking steps, trying to show what can be done. I've also been doing other things next to my art interest or art activities. But I think the future is not the person who now thinks I'm going to be green is just one train delayed. I think the future for art world and for global also economic world is laying much more in artificial intelligence, seeing how to create a system that works better for commercial than the systems that we have in place now for commercial activities. And this is all in the writing right now.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by being a train delayed? Do you think we're too late for the climate disaster?
I think that only with technology we will be able to afford to get out or to find the start of solutions for what we are in right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that when my father was talking about ecology, it was 30 years ago, that was maybe the right time to do it. But I am not, and nobody was really listening to him and to his other partners who were speaking like this. I think that now we need to be thinking further than just repairing something. We need to create ways of having a more positive outcome mm-hmm. with the way we live. And this is involving a lot of things, not only repairing your image you have in public. Mm-hmm. It's involving radical change, technology, it's involving how you, and the real overlaps will be there. Technology and art, for instance, can be another way of thinking, another set of mind than only fast profit and the ways you measure success.
Maya Hoffman, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe to FDI Podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we're off to southern Poland to speak with Ewa Bogosz-Moore, director of the Polish National Radio Symphony Orchestra, about the transformation of post-industrial city Katowice.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.